Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to Third Stream View. I'm your host, the irrepressible PK, and I'm here for Monday evening, May 30th. Boy, this month has gone quickly. I don't even know who won the Indianapolis 500, nor do I really care. And like I've always said about these big races, you know, I hope no one is ever injured or killed in these super races. But if they are, I hope it's spectacular. Okay, having said that, my thanks again to BBSRadio.com for allowing me to continue our free speech. Thank goodness for alternative media. You can call in the show at 530-413-4520 or 530-413-4511. I'm expecting a call from a interesting young man. I met him through a friend of a good friend, and he had an interesting information story to tell about his time as a private contractor for a brief amount of time down at Gitmo, our wonderful prison camp for the evil terrorists and some who apparently are not evil terrorists. Seems like there's probably some, like so many in our U.S. prison system, that don't really belong there. But anyway, he has some interesting observations of what went down there, and I certainly enjoyed hearing what he had to say, and I'm sure that you will too. Some interesting things happened this week at the Thomas Jefferson Memorial there in Washington, D.C., including Adam Kokesh is an 8-year U.S. Marine Corps veteran who was in the Iraq War, who now opposes the wars, and he's even run for office. But apparently, he and some of his friends were at the Jefferson Memorial, and they were accused of dancing, not protesting. But if you've seen this video, and then they were arrested, he was body slammed into the ground. Several of them were arrested. The mighty park police came to the rescue. There was no loud music going on. There was just no massive dancing. And there was a couple kind of kissing a little bit. And then they, you know, moved a little bit. It could be construed as dancing, I guess. But it's so insulting, with Thomas Jefferson washing over it, our federal masters and lords didn't appreciate it. So what's going on in our country reminds me of 1984, the novel, where the central government, that the federal government is continually prosecuting a major war overseas, which is sucking up billions of dollars of revenue, while at home, the same government demands obedience and conformity, Patriot Act, NSA spying. And by the way, the Patriot Act was just extended for another 4 years. It was signed by Obama. He signed it for another 4 years. Hope and change is on the way, as always. So we've got more of that crap to contend with. In fact, I heard that the Patriot Act, a lot of it was written before 9/11 actually happened. And we can thank that Zionist prick Michael Chertoff had a lot to do with that, as he did for these X-ray porno scanners in the airports. He gets a rake on that or a kickback. He represented the company that produced a lot of those things. So, yes, trouble at the Thomas Jefferson Memorial in Washington, D.C. And the good news is apparently they're going back again this weekend or later this week. So we'll see what happens. But for those of you who haven't seen it, I mean, it really frosted me to watch it. I was very angry to watch how these people were treated. It's just ridiculous. And the police have been militarized here at home. I don't know if you realize that, but they're more militarized. They're federalized. The Department of Homeland Security and the Defense Department are giving the cops more heavily armored vehicles and all this sort of thing. I don't know if you saw what happened. I think it was earlier this month or last month at the Western Illinois University or University of Western Illinois during their annual street party for the kids, the college kids, and they weren't doing anything. They weren't rioting or destroying property. They were partying, having some drinks, partying. They were in the street. It's like a rural, not rural, but residential, but nice older type homes, all college. And the police came, you know, jackbooted thugs, all in their black outfits with their billy clubs and their mace. And they literally attacked these kids. It was like unbelievable. So, you know, long story short, I hate what's happening in our country, to our country. And I blame government at all levels are doing this. You know, not the private sector. Well, the private sector is enriching itself, those who are politically connected. But it's awful. If you've seen any footage of this, Western Illinois University or University of Western Illinois, there must have been, I don't know, 50 cops out there in their black riot gear attacking the college kids, you know, who, again, who weren't even rioting or doing anything out of the ordinary that college kids do. They were drinking and partying, but they weren't, you know, burning cars or turning cars over or, you know, throwing bricks through windows, anything like that. You would be just as shocked as if you were probably having a barbecue and these same damn cops, you know, ascended on you with their billy clubs and their pepper spray, you know. So it's getting bad, folks, and I think it's going to get a lot worse than it's going to get better. And speaking of this awful economy, I heard a good reference to His Highness the head of the Fed, Bernanke bin Laden. So one could say that Bernanke's done a lot more damage to this country than Osama ever did, even though I still don't believe Osama had next to nothing to do with 9/11. But Bernanke, with his monetary policy, making the dollar worth less, see more inflation on the horizon, and the denial by so many. But it's I think it's going to collapse maybe next year, but it cannot be continued. It can't be sustained, this inflation, this spending, these deficits, China buying our debt, Japan buying our debt. There's going to come a reckoning day, and I hope we're prepared when it happens, especially stockpiling food. I think that there could be some shocks to this country that Americans have never experienced. When the monetary system collapses. So it's something to keep in mind. Gerald Colenti and Jim Rogers, Jim Sinclair, many people are warning about this, and they certainly deserve their say because they will be proven correct, as they usually are with their predictions about the monetary situation. Meanwhile, Ron Paul is hanging in there. He's like the main contender. But he's being ignored by the networks, and they don't hardly put him up when there's polls. But it's going to be different this time around. There's another debate soon. I think it's the first week in June. And I myself, of course, am a Ron Paul Republican. I worked on Ron Paul's 1988 campaign when he ran for Libertarian Party presidential candidate. And, of course, in 2008 and this year I'm behind him. I've made my donation, I hope you folks will, to the Ron Paul campaign. And we'll see where this goes. I hope he grows some more cojones and gets more aggressive in his debating stance, but he is the man. And speaking of the man, I see that my friend Tim is out there on line one. Tim, are you out there, sir?
I'm here. How you doing, PK?
Great. Welcome to Third Stream View.
Glad to be here, man.
Would you like some tea or coffee?
Oh, some tea and coffee would be great.
Sorry, it's self-service.
All right, no problem.
Well, listen, I'm so glad that you were available, and I was giving our listeners a little preview about you that I didn't want to say too much, but that it was very interesting speaking with you a while back about your little experience down there as a private contractor down there at Gitmo, and I won't get into why you were down there. I'd just rather keep that anonymous as your name, but and you did something that I found to be very heroic and very principled. I don't even know if you knew at the time how principled you were about this whole thing, but we're going to get into this. Plus, I'm going to hip you to some things about the military-industrial congressional complex that you should know. And another good thing about you coming on the show is you're going to find out some things you're going to take with you at a younger age that I didn't find out till much later in life. And so you guys are the younger generation is the hope for the future, and so it's sort of win-win for both of us.
Well, that sounds great. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, thanks again. So tell us, you were down there, you were down to Gitmo as a private contractor with how many members of your team were down there with you?
There was about 10 of us down there, and we were there for a total of 4 days.
4 days. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And so during that 4 days, you also had a tour of sort of a general tour that probably not top security sort of things, but you sort of had a general tour of the area?
Yeah, I mean, we were kind of assigned a, I guess you would call it a tour guide for the duration of our trip, who, you know, the trip started out pretty great, and I thought that our guide was really knowledgeable and pretty decent person, and I kind of decided to take advantage of that and ask a few questions and everything else, but it just kind of turned sour when I apparently was asking the wrong questions throughout the trip, you know.
Gee, what are the right questions? Were you supposed to be handed a sheet of the acceptable questions?
Apparently so. I mean, I guess I didn't really realize you know how touchy everybody was about everything, and maybe I should have been heading down there. I didn't really think that it was going to be a big deal. The person who was our quote-unquote tour guide down there was a non-military person. So the questions that I asked and the things that I said, you know, he was a private contractor down there as well who was living on the base. So I kind of felt like asking questions and getting answers to things that I was really just curious about, that I wouldn't really be stepping on any toes or insulting anybody, because the last thing I want to do is go down there and, you know, do what I was doing and make anybody upset or angry. So I kind of felt by, you know, this person not being a military person that, you know, that I could ask these questions and get an honest answer from him. But, you know, it didn't really turn out that way.
Yeah, that's true. But, however, even though you were down there temporarily as a contractor, Tim, you are also a taxpayer. And those
that's
people
true.
Work... Those people work for us. You know, when they always say support our troops, I mean, I understand that. We also support them through our taxes. But what's never mentioned is that, you know what? They work for us. They work for us taxpayers.
That's a good point.
Yeah. So if anybody has a right to criticize, it's especially veterans or ask questions, and especially just an innocent, honest, law-abiding person like you who is a taxpayer. And you're very curious about things. I mean, how many people get to go down there and see what's going on, or just see on the outskirts of what's going on?
Yeah, and, you know, I really, you know, just to be clear, you know, none of my questions were really directed towards criticizing what
right.
was going on there. It was really just about, you know, me just being curious and wanting to know how things worked and wanting to take advantage of the situation that I was in and trying to come away from the whole situation knowing a little bit more than I did going into it.
Right, right. And it's not like you weren't asking questions about, well, how many tanks are here and how many missiles and all. It wasn't nothing
no,
like that.
No, nothing like that. They seem to be pretty innocent questions to me.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm sure they were, because you don't come off, just speaking with you, you don't come off as a person who would be trying to make a problem. You had innocent, honest questions.
Absolutely.
And that's the thing about my show. There's no political correctness here. There's no censorship. I don't cut people off. I don't know if you ever get to listen to talk radio. I do, just to see how wrong they are, especially about foreign policy. But and especially, you know, today being Memorial Day, what I've learned also in the last few years, and I'm not a pacifist per se, and I'm very pro-gun rights and gun ownership, but practically every war last century that America was involved in was not necessary. They were staged by the powers that be, and they get all these people killed and all this destruction. So, I mean, long story short, yes, thank you for our troops for their bravery, and the ones who lost their lives, they fought bravery, they served their country, which is a separate issue from the lies that were told by politicians who say they want peace to the public, while behind the scenes, they're planning to make war and draw our nation into wars. And, you know, all this collusion, that's the part that really aggravates me.
Yeah, I'm right there with you.
Yeah. So, okay, so tell us a little bit about your, what was your first little outing like, your first little tour, or?
We started out pretty innocent, just kind of being brought along to the different beaches and, you know, the different museums and different things, and you know, as we're on the island, we're being you know, shuttled around on a little van, and from each place to place, this is kind of where I'm deciding to take advantage of the knowledge that our tour guide seems to have about everything that's there, and he seems to be really interested in the history and everything else. So that's kind of what fueled my questioning to fuel my curiosity. And I just kind of started asking questions like, you know, well, how many people are here? I kind of felt like the more and more I dug into it, the touchier everyone seemed to be about it, just because of the answers that came out of it. I mean, I don't want to be quoted as to, you know, how many people are there, military, non-military, or
right, right.
Because these are obviously all very general, estimated numbers. I don't know if this guy knew exactly how many people were there, but it was somewhere along the lines of around 1,000 military people on the base, and
including contractors.
Including
you say 1,000 military. Is that including private contractors too?
No. That's actually enlisted, like, military soldiers that were on the base.
Okay.
And that's not including their families. That is actual personnel, and that was a roundabout estimate. He said 1,000 or less. He said somewhere between 900,000, military presence there. But as far as the other people that were on the base, there was another 3,000 people on the base besides them, and this was made up of military families, and also the big number was the workforce. Now, the workforce is made up entirely of individuals from, I believe it was Jamaica and Thailand. Now, there's roughly 1,500 or so people from Thailand there, and somewhere around 1,000 people from Jamaica there, and this is their workforce. Naturally, my next question was they're here, feeding people and washing clothes, whatever, just the day-to-day tasks as far as the workforce goes. And my next question naturally was, well, what do these people make? Well, the people that came from Thailand, they were making approximately $1 per hour. The people from Jamaica were making a little bit more, about $1.50 per hour. And I was told that this was negotiated through their government to ours. So we drove by the areas that they were living, hung out. I mean, there was even one point where we were walking out of the dock in the marina just to take a little boat ride tour where they were going to take us to a few places, and one of the soldiers was fishing and had caught a squid that he had pulled up onto the dock, and the squid was going everywhere and squirting ink everywhere and everything. And a couple guys from Thailand came up there and ended up killing it with a couple sticks and hauled it back. And I asked what that was all about. They said, oh, well, you know, they don't make all that much money, and any chance they get to be able to eat something that they don't have to pay for, they take advantage of it. And it just kind of was surreal to me. You know, it was, I'm sure some people will eat different things or whatever, but it was pretty clear that they weren't really doing all that well. They were, you know, living 4 to 6 people, and, you know, it was probably closer to, like, dorm rooms. We were staying in what was considered officers' quarters.
Uh-huh.
But not to get too far off task anyway, they, all these questions that I was asking, the answers just started to get more and more ridiculous, and maybe I was a little, condescending, I guess you could say, when I said, so just so that we're clear, there's 3 people for every 1 military personnel on this base. And the answer, of course, was yes. And they can't tell you exactly how many people are actually in the prison there at Guantanamo Bay, but they definitely told me that it was less than 400. So, you know, in case it needed to be any more ridiculous, I just kind of thought to myself, without going any further at that point, wow, there's a lot of people here with a lot of money being spent. But, I mean, not the money's not going to, you know, to the less fortunate, obviously, who are there that are... God only knows what they're doing. I can't imagine how many jobs there really are there on the island, like,
right.
You know what I mean?
Well,
but,
may I assume that you were earning more than the Thais and the Jamaicans?
Oh, absolutely, yes.
So, and with this huge military budget, I mean, the biggest one ever, which Obama recently signed, you would think that there would be enough to pay these, fellas from Jamaica and Thailand a more decent wage than they were getting.
Yeah, and you'd think that, but, you know, like I pointed out before, you know, our tour guide, you know, made it really clear to me that this was a wage that was negotiated by their governments.
Right,
and almost
right.
Just to, you know, to give our government a pass is like, oh, well, we weren't the ones who decided it. They decided it, you know.
Their governments negotiated it, and they're skimming a nice chunk from what these guys will be making.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's a possibility as well, you know.
Yeah.
As far as, you know, where money is going, one of the other things that was mentioned kind of in a different conversation was, you know, you drive into the base and we go in and there's about 3 football fields that stretch across this area before we get to the officers' quarters where we were staying. And
wow.
They were just beautiful football fields. I mean, nicer than, you know, what you'd see an NFL team practice on. I mean, these were... you know, Nike sport courts that were just gorgeous fields.
3?
You know, right next to it was a brand new bowling alley and a 2-screen outdoor movie theater. And I just asked, I said, you know, how, you guys, they seem to have it pretty good here. And our guide told me that they have been operating on what they call a black budget, which is a budget where they can pretty much buy and do whatever they want without the president actually being able to see what they spend. Apparently,
sure.
That's not going on anymore, but that was happening for a long time, so where, you know, they were given whatever money they wanted for things, so they used it.
Are you allowed to take pictures?
I was allowed to take pictures, although, you know, there are certain areas and certain places where that's strictly prohibited. You know, you literally can't face a certain direction with a camera in your hand. It was more, I don't know if it was, you know, what was up on the hill at one point, but if we were at a beach at one point where I kind of was looking towards it and I had my camera in my hand and an officer had come up and kind of given me a pretty strict warning as to not be, you know, facing a camera in that direction. But other than that, they were fine with us, you know, taking pictures of things, and it really seemed more like a, you know, like a tourist attraction with everything
right.
else, you know?
Well, for example, could you have taken pictures of the football fields?
Yeah, you know, I don't think that they would have minded that. I mean, I was even offered an opportunity to go out there and throw the ball around if I wanted to. You know, I wasn't really interested in that.
Right.
I really spent most of my time in the officers' quarters, quote-unquote, which was basically the equivalent of, you know, I don't know, a single bed Holiday Inn suite,
sure.
I guess, with a,
uh-huh.
with a small kitchen.
No.
Nothing that was too fancy or flashy. I was actually really unimpressed with the accommodations there, just as far as, you know, technology and everything else goes. something as simple as having internet access was really, really complicated for pretty much everyone there.
Including the people that worked on the base or just you visitors?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they have these areas where you can go, like little rec centers that have like pool tables, TVs, computers, video game stations and stuff for the soldiers to just kind of, you know, hang out and watch, you know, sporting events or play video games or whatever. And there's a whole system not too different from being at a hotel where you log in with your IDs and whatnot to get, to get on the internet and everything. We were given all this information. And, I mean, long story longer, nothing really worked. it was really, really complicated to even...
We'll get back to you.
I'm sorry. We couldn't. I had a hard time even contacting the outside world. I couldn't even, you know, call home or email home to let them know that I had arrived safely, you know.
Why am I not surprised? It might interest you to know also, Tim, that I know this happened in Iraq, probably Afghanistan, that, you know, our troops who are supposedly out there to defend our rights, including our right to free speech. Well, a lot of what they can see on the internet is censored over there. They can't get certain websites. They can't read certain alternative information out there. So it's controlled.
Yeah, well, that was another big thing that I had there was when I finally did... get a line out to call back home and to call back and speak to my loved ones. You know, a big plaque that was, you know, bolted right next to the phone that said that all phone conversations are monitored. And, I realized military base and everything else, but it definitely, was just an uneasy feeling that I hadn't encountered before.
Well, of course. Well, I mean, they monitor everything now with this stupid extension of the Patriot Act. I mean, they're probably listening in on this. And as far as I'm concerned, the feds can go screw themselves. But I mean, that's what they're into. They're, you know, and your generation is growing up in this national security state that's, you know, it's just marching towards a police state more and more. I think every day YouTube is full of police brutality incidents. I may have seen some of it, but it's just going on at an accelerated pace, and 9/11's been the excuse for them to expand all this. And of course, as I salute my microphone, Tim, it's all done in the spirit of patriotism.
Yeah.
Now, well, let me ask you.
That was definitely taking place there.
Yeah, let me ask you now, with the team of private contractors that you were with down there, did you happen to be one of the youngest guys amongst the team?
Probably by an average of at least 20 years.
Wow. So I'm guessing that some of those guys, in their confused patriotism, were maybe getting a little miffed at you because you were part of their out of that group team, whatever, and they were probably getting a little annoyed by the fact that you had some honest questions that you were asking.
Yeah, I...
And they vibed you, I bet.
Yeah, I mean, it was, I guess I didn't realize it at the time, but it was definitely a situation where, I came to find out later that the people that I was there with took my questions and my curiosity as disrespectful, and the comments that I received back were, as far as I was lucky that I didn't get my nose broken by a Marine. And, you know, I kind of replied to that as, you know, well, I asked questions to a non-military tour guide, and it's not my fault that the answers just kind of seem to be a little silly, you know?
Well, yeah. Well, Tim, at this point, I'd like to congratulate you and let you know that, thank goodness, unlike millions of other Americans, you, my friend, are not one of the sheeple.
Yeah.
So,
thank you.
Say what?
I said, well, thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Because, listen, there's a lot of them out there. There's a lot of them out there. And Americans have a lot of fear. They're jumpy about stuff. They don't know about foreigners. They don't know about foreign countries, about foreign cultures, on and on and on. Okay, so you did you had that tour, and then what happened like the second day, or what culminated into the little thing that I was so impressed by?
Well, it kind of kept on going with more questions along these lines of, came into play of, well, how much does it cost to keep this place running? It was something that was along the lines of like $750,000 per day, just as far as energy and all this other stuff goes. It was crazy. I mean, I kept on asking these questions that just seemed to be more and more ridiculous. Now, the whole culmination of my trip kind of came to a point where our last night there, we ended up at the top of a big hill where there are three windmills that don't work, by the way. They just sit there. They're more like landmarks at this point, I guess. And they are all less than 20 years old.
Are they supposed to be for electric, Tim?
Yeah, they're supposed to be, but apparently they stopped working a long time ago, and they just didn't. They didn't have the budget to fix them because, you know, God knows they need that. They need new football fields and movie theaters. You know,
Tim, maybe the windmills were hooked up to the computers.
That might be so. Anyway, the purpose of us going up there was not to see the windmills. It was to see the wall. It lit up at night, you can see the wall of the fence that's keeping all the Cubans out of their own area.
Right.
You know, one of the questions that I asked that I found really interesting was, I didn't understand just because I didn't know and I hadn't taken the time to you know, research anything, but, you know, I'm standing in Cuba, but I'm on American soil. So I asked my guide, you know, where am I? He said, you're on American soil. And I said, so does America own this land, or what's the deal? Are we borrowing it, or what's happening? And they said, well, we lease it from Cuba.
Right.
And I said, okay, well, you know, so how does that work? And apparently we lease it from them for something like, I don't know, it's like less than $1,000 a year. Some ridiculously low, crazy number that apparently Cuba has never cashed these checks. It's really just kind of like an agreement of, like, they're letting us be here. So my next question naturally was, well, what would happen if they wanted this area back? I mean, it seems to be pretty nice, you know. There's a bunch of beaches, it's, you know, nice access and everything else. And the response I got was, well, we'd like to see them try. I right away just kind of laughed and said, well, that's not really an answer. Like, what would we really do? You know, and he was like, well, we'd like to see them try. I said, no, that's kind of just like our guns are bigger than yours.
Right, a militaristic answer.
And that's not a real answer. You know, that's not a real answer, and that's not, that's you know, just BS. And you know, it kind of ended with, well, we have a good relationship, yada, 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 and started backpedaling and everything else. So, I mean, the whole thing just kind of started to be very shaky, and I think at this point our guide and the people with me were getting a little fed up with my questions and everything else. So I tried to, you know, tone it back a little bit. I really wasn't intending on ruffling any feathers or making anybody upset. I really just was genuinely curious. You know, I didn't want to insult anybody when I said that I didn't want to go to a barbecue with the chief of investigations at the prison, you know, that's, they all wanted to go. I didn't. I said, I don't.
Wait, now, was this after you were up on the hill, same day?
No, that happened before then. It was just,
are you on the last day now?
The last night that we were there, we ended up on top of this hill. I'm sorry, I don't want to confuse our listeners, but the night that we had met the chief of interrogations at the prison, who has been there for more than 20 years apparently, and seemed to be a really, really nice guy before before I realized what he did, and after I realized what he did, I just didn't care to go to his house, you know.
So you're exactly, in other words, the whole team you were with were invited to go to his house for dinner.
Yeah, for a barbecue. You know, he wanted us to go there and have a barbecue, and everybody else was all gung-ho and wanted to go. And I said, well, go right ahead, but I'm not going. You know, I don't feel comfortable with it. And when asked why, I said, well, you know, it pretty sure that that guy has done some pretty awful things to, you know, probably some pretty awful people, but that's, you know, neither here nor there. It's not my place to judge, but I'm not comfortable being around somebody who's done the things that he's probably done. And I got quite a, you know, hazing for that as well. But
well, I was really impressed that you did that.
Yeah, and, you know, everybody else went, and I really,
so what?
I couldn't see it. You know, I just, it seemed like a pretty simple thing to me, which I was really surprised. Some of the people that were in my party ended up going there and not deciding that that was a little creepy or a little weird, but.
Well, Tim, I'm really proud that you did that and thankful. And let me give you a little point of order here. I think it was your duty and your right to judge. Because, Tim, I'm holding in front of me now a copy of the United States Constitution, including the Declaration of Independence and the Bill of Rights. Now, okay, as you know, and I love doing this to the military veterans or anybody who opposes me on this, I love throwing this in their face. Because, Tim, I think you will agree with me that, as you know, the military and the politicians are sworn to defend and uphold the United States Constitution, correct?
Correct.
Okay, Tim. Now, I'm holding the Bill of Rights in front of me, which is the first 10 amendments to the U.S. Constitution. Tim, Amendment number 8. It's very short. And it says, excessive bail shall not be required, nor excessive fines imposed, nor cruel and unusual punishments inflicted. Tim, what does the military and the politicians not understand about that, that they're sworn to uphold? Nor cruel and unusual and punishments inflicted. What don't they understand about that?
Yeah, you know, I got to be honest that I'm not, you know, too familiar with the details on the Constitution, but without knowing that, it just kind of seems like a no-brainer.
Exactly, that
you shouldn't be able to do that to somebody. But I mean, and no matter how good, bad, or otherwise they are, it shouldn't really matter if they're a person. Then they're a person. And that's my personal belief. And no politics need to be involved for
the
me
rule
to,
of law.
Be able to say that and believe that.
The rule of law needs to be involved, Tim, because you know what? What if they're innocent? No trial? You're going to torture people? And it's not even allowed in the Constitution?
Yeah.
So, Tim, let me give you this food for thought here. Tim, I never confuse patriotism with loyalty to the government. My patriotism, as well as yours should be, and everybody's should be, is, Tim, my patriotism is to the Declaration of Independence, the Bill of Rights, and the U.S. Constitution. I don't care about some temporary occupant of the White House or Congress. This is the document that they're sworn to uphold and defend, and they don't do it. And conservatives and Republicans talk about the Constitution. We got to support our constitutional values and what the Constitution stands for. Yeah, as long as it suits them. And then when you call them on it on certain things, well, they hem and haw, and then, you know, they resent you for doing. They resent it. But Tim, we have the truth on our side.
Absolutely.
So what you did, I mean, I really commend you for that, and that took guts, and even though you were a little bit unsure legalistically, you were right morally, and your gut feeling was right, and your heart and your mind were on the same page, and you were correct about that.
Well, yeah, I mean, there was no doubt in my mind or heart about that. I mean, and I didn't need to get into it, and I absolutely was not rude to the gentleman who, you know, invited us. He bought us a drink. We had a nice conversation. I didn't, you know, at first know who he was or what he did, and it didn't matter to me. After I found out, I chose not to go to his house. I don't think that's a very big deal, and I don't think that I disrespected him in any way. So, you know, the way the rest of my party felt afterwards didn't really make much of a difference to me. You know, the statement, "I'm lucky that a Marine didn't break my nose," I don't think really applies, because I wasn't disrespectful to anybody over there, and I understand that not everybody over there shares the same views as me, and the last thing I want to do is go over there and preach or you know, and try to change anybody's mind. I'm not going to do that and disrespect them. So I just kept to myself as far as, you know, military, you know, personnel went while I was there. But, you know, that my party didn't see it that way.
Yeah, and your party, their mentality is you're lucky you weren't harmed or threatened by a military member who works for you and your taxes.
Yeah, exactly.
treating you like you're some criminal slash and or terrorist. You know, that's their mentality.
Yeah, apparently. I mean, was kind of stunned by it, and, you know, and the fact that I'm not allowed back, I guess, is not surprising enough. You know, I mean, it's,
you're not allowed back?
Oh, no, yeah, I have a letter signed by the president that I am not permitted in Guantanamo Bay ever again.
Wow. Now, did you have that letter? Did you keep it?
My employer has the letter, and I was able to smooth things over with said employer after this incident by pleading my case and everything. And I probably could end up with a copy of this letter, but I don't think it's something that I want to bring up in the near future because it would probably make them feel like I'm making fun of it rather than taking it seriously, and they were not happy about the way the trip went. So
yeah, I completely understand, while at the same time, that would be like a plaque of honor on my wall.
Absolutely. Anytime I tell the story to friends or people that I talk to, I get the same thing of, you know, you should get a copy of that letter and frame it on your wall. And I am 100% on board, but, you know, I still got to make a living, you know?
Yeah, well, that's completely right. You're completely right about that, and you played it right. And I happen to know that you, because of your work, you fly quite often.
I do.
How do you like the way you're treated in the airports these days?
You know, it's funny you should say that because, you know, I think I was coming out of San Francisco, and it was right when they introduced these new machines where, you know, people were getting all upset about, you know, being it looking naked and everything in them, and I had never seen one and didn't really know much about it because I try not to, you know, invest too much of my time into that sort of thing. But
sure.
I saw it, and I was talking to the person that I was traveling with, and I noticed right away that one of the security guards was, kind of eyeballing me and you know, giving me different looks and whatnot. By the time we got up there, you know, of course, I was screened to, you know, go the whole nine yards and everything else. And I was extremely friendly to this person who was going through all my stuff right in front of me, which I didn't really have a problem with. I just thought I'd have a little fun with it and be overly friendly, which this gentleman did not find amusing whatsoever. And asked right. if I was always like this, and ended up taking about an hour and a half, and thank goodness I got there early, but kind of thought it was a little bit ridiculous. You know, I could have very well missed the flight, and there was nothing to hide. I was carrying, you know, just a standard, you know, go underneath your seat roller bag with me that maybe had, you know, 2 days worth of clothes in it and some toiletries. There was nothing to be found, obviously, and, you know, a cell phone and a wallet, but I was held up for quite a long time over just, you know, being overly nice because I thought it was really silly that they were making such a big deal out of it, and they didn't like the fact that I was sort of poking fun at it.
Did
but
you? I mean,
it turns out to be the story of my life, as far as our listeners are concerned, right?
They took you out of line?
Yeah, absolutely.
Wow. Well, you know what TSA stands for, don't you?
What's that?
Thousands of sexual aggressors. Or
like
thousands
it.
Of stupid a-holes.
You know, isn't it amazing that that there's an organization out there that fails so often but still remains intact?
Well, yeah.
I mean, they're constantly failing all their tests and all, you know they do, you know, different, you know, surprise tests and everything, all the different airports to have... you know, what percentage of efficiency they're running at, and they're awful across the board. There's not, I mean, they're just god-awful everywhere. And but, I mean, nothing happens. It's just so that we know how bad they are, basically.
Well, and they want to intimidate us and get away with touching people like they do, which would otherwise land you in jail if a private citizen did that to you. That's, you know, they would be arrested for that. They did it to a baby like a week or two ago.
Really?
Yeah, I saw it. It's just ridiculous. And you know, they failed so bad on 9/11 that the politicians or the Republicans, they gave themselves a $40 billion raise, and they gave us the Department of Homeland Security, which the Democrats have kept in place, and that they've expanded it. So that's what they did. They created a new huge bureaucracy.
You know, I think you'll really like this. About maybe 5 or 6 years ago, maybe four, and this is obviously after 9/11, my mother was working TSA security for NBA flights only that were coming in and out of town. I won't say which city, but she had run into a situation where Shaquille O'Neal had come through and had, you know, a number of different items and things on him where, you know, he had set off the metal detector and, you know, they saw, you know, just a couple of, like, pocket knives and stuff in his bag and all
bling,
these different
yeah,
things.
Bling,
and, you know,
man.
He wouldn't take off the shoes and all these different things. And, you know, and my mother had said, you know, she had kind of started to say, oh, you know, Mr. O'Neill, you're going to need, and her superior had said, oh, no. They just he's fine. Just let him go. And my mother was like, you know, well, no, he has, you know, this and this. And they, oh, no, but it's, you know, this is a really big client and contract for the airline. And we don't want to upset them. They get really upset when they're held up and everything else. And, you know, I never really thought much about it. I just kind of thought of it as like, oh, well, of course, you know, who's gonna stop an NBA player? But, I mean, come on, it's not like it's out of the question to hear about a pro athlete, you know, shooting or stabbing somebody, right?
Right, but especially him, though, because him, his first name sounds awful Muslim to me.
Right, yeah.
By the way, I told this joke a few weeks ago, but I'll ask you. Tim, do you know what one Palestinian woman said to the other Palestinian woman?
Know what?
Do you think this bomb makes my butt look too big? Anyway, on this show, I'm going off a little bit, but I'm totally down on the demonization of Muslims and the whole thing. I've been to a couple of Muslim countries several times, Morocco. In fact, when I was in Morocco, and this was in 93 and 94 after the first World Trade Center black flag attack.
Yeah.
My friend and I, we went to this Muslim fella's house, and I get off the beaten path. And we went to this fella's house and bought a big chunk of hash. He had his scale. I had my little calculator. And I've also been in Tunisia several times off the beaten path. Nobody ever came up to me and tried to force me to convert. So there's a lot of this whole war on terrorism that's been blown out of proportion, and it's just a way to seize more power. And look what they're doing to us at home. And look at the drug war. They want to talk about cutting spending. That's like, since that's really been kicked in the late 60s, that's like $1 trillion, a trillion tax dollars down a government rat hole.
Yeah.
It's a crime.
Talk about losing a war, right?
Exactly. And Tim, talk about drug addiction. You know who's addicted? It's the cops, the politicians, and the bureaucrats. They're addicted to the drug war and all the little perks they get from the military and the asset forfeitures. And, you know, you know that when they confiscate cash, they don't turn all of it in. You know, there's a lot of corruption. There's crime. There's dirty cops. You know, so they've just made it a mess. And this comes from, I call him Saint Reagan. Saint Reagan was notorious for saying that, you know, government is the problem. It's not the solution. So the guy who says this, Saint Reagan, he then launches a massive, centrally planned, socialistic, federally planned, central planning drug war on the whole country. Consequently, our prisons are full of a lot of people who shouldn't even be there, many of which are nonviolent drug, quote-unquote, offenders. They filled up the prisons with these people. You know, prison is only for violent criminals. And there's all these so-called, you know, these drugs, quote-unquote, criminals in there. It's a total mess. It's awful.
Oh, you know, I couldn't agree with you more. I have a couple close friends who were, you know, put in prison for a little over a year for just being in a house that was raided. you know, had no idea what was going on the floor above them. And, you know, it's not like they were, you know, squeaky clean innocent, you know what I mean? You know, smoke a joint here, do this, that, whatever else. I mean, this house was raided and busted for some big-time stuff that was going on, and for these guys being in the house just for where they were, I mean, talk about wrong place at the wrong time, they end up in federal prison for, you know, for a little over a year. I go in and visit and go home and talk to them, and, you know, I'm just kind of sitting around the room, and, you know, you got, you know, 4 hours to sit down and talk to somebody, and there's not a whole lot to talk about, and you kind of start, you know, looking around the room and talking to other people, and I want to say that a good 80-90% of the people in the room were in there for the same thing that he was.
Wow.
You know, just, oh, drug-related, oh, this, and it's like, wow, I mean, does anybody in here hurt somebody? Did anybody in here, you know, I mean, it's not like they're, you know, squeaky clean innocent, like I said, you know, they have their problems just like the next person, but it seems like most of the people who are in this room really need some help, not a box to stick it in, you know?
Exactly. Well, Tim, you know, you know, alcoholics are not treated like drug addicts, and they have a medical problem.
Yeah, funny, huh?
You know, it's ridiculous. And I don't know if you knew this, but last fall when California, when Prop 19 was up, to decriminalize marijuana, or at least medicinal marijuana, you know, the bastards voted it down. And it might interest you to know that the growers also opposed it. All the Democratic, you know, those great Democrat leadership politicians, they all opposed it. And the church opposed it. So what strange bedfellows is that? Because the growers, they don't want the price to fall, I think.
Well, maybe so. I mean, I guess I don't know too much about it, but I do know that you know, going in and seeing my friends in that hole that they had to sit in, and the people who were around them, and just the uselessness of it all is more than frustrating, without a doubt.
It's terrible, and I hope that your generation, I mean, because maybe it'll hopefully change, but by the time your gang starts getting elected or whatever, but. You know, it's not a big deal to talk about it now. It's, you know, Colorado's considering it, you know, marijuana. It's just, you know, you have a otherwise sort of a worthless weed that when it's made illegal, it becomes worth its weight in gold. I mean, otherwise it's not expensive. You know, marijuana, hemp would be very inexpensive, but once it's illegal, it's worth a lot more.
Most profitable drug on the planet, right?
Probably. Now, and of course, hemp is different than the marijuana plant. They're, you know, they're first cousins, hemp fiber. But still, you know, you own your body, not the state. And, you know, it shouldn't, obviously it shouldn't be illegal. It was legal until 1937. But that idiot Harry Anslinger, who was in charge of Prohibition ended in 33, so he had nothing else to regulate or control, so he went on this anti-marijuana campaign, which also fingered blacks, musicians, and Latins for smoking the evil herb, the evil weed. And by 1937, they were able to make it illegal. So all of a sudden, it's illegal. And the legacy of that is more prisons, more people in prison, you know. So this is a facade about America, all the freedoms we have. Yes, there are, but underneath that, there's a lot of BS going on. In many ways, we're free. Yeah, we're free to obey.
Pretty much.
Did you? I don't know if you heard me talking about it soon earlier. Did you hear about what happened at the Thomas Jefferson Memorial in Washington earlier this week?
I did not.
There were one of the main guys there was Adam Kokesh. I don't know if you've heard of him, but he's a eight year Marine Corps veteran, and he's probably, I don't know, 30, something like that. And I think he's even run for office. And he was body slammed there because he and some other people were accused of dancing. You can see it on the video. They were and there was no loud music, or there was no protesting, but there was some body movement as if there was some light dancing going on. In fact, there was even a couple, say like you and your girlfriend, just holding each other and swaying a little bit and a kiss or two. And they were arrested and taken off by the park police. I mean, it's all over YouTube. It's just, I was so pissed off watching it. I couldn't believe it. Well, good news is they're coming back again, I think, this weekend. But it's amazing what happened when you see this. So, right in front of Thomas Jefferson's statue. I mean, I wish the statue could have pissed on those park cops because they're just, you know, I couldn't enforce shit like that. I couldn't do it if I was a cop, or, you know, I couldn't do it.
Well, I guess that's why you're not a cop, right?
Yeah, but again, you know, Tim, these are other Americans treating Americans this way.
Yeah.
You know? So it's really bad. And again, YouTube is all full of this stuff. Two weeks ago or so? Another vet, I think it was a Marine Corps vet, a Hispanic fella out in Arizona, I think. He's at his house. He was working night shifts, I believe. And the cops come into his neighborhood. They're on some stupid drug raid. They go to his place by mistake. Well, he grabs a weapon. He doesn't know. He was, you know, asleep, half asleep. He's, you know, they're banging on his door or whatever. And he stands there ready to defend himself. And they put, I think they put 71 shots in him, the cops.
71. Well, yeah, you know, you got to make sure he's down, right?
Yeah, yeah. They killed him. And, you know, the cops are notorious for lying and trying to cover their tracks. And then what they really don't like now is that good citizens are filming them. Well, they don't want to be filmed. And Illinois even has some stupid laws against it, you know, because people are turning the cameras on the cops. And their cell phone cameras. Well, you're tried in front of a judge. Well, he's a lawyer and he's part of the system, so you know it's kind of hard to get some justice. But we have to keep fighting the power, and we can't let up on this crap because it's just getting worse. I hate where it's going. I hate where the economy's going. I don't like the lies, expanding the war. I'm sure you know this, that the military budget is bankrupting our country just as much as the entitlements and the welfare budget.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, you don't have to look too closely to see it. And I can tell you that after one trip to Guantanamo Bay, the kind of money that they spent there just to entertain the troops while they're hanging out there, you know, it's enough to make you sick. You know, you look at you know, the different programs in schools that they get cut, and I mean, you can decide to put that money in any direction that you want to, but you know, having three state of the art football fields and bowling alleys and movie theaters and everything else, just so that you have something to do while you're hanging out, you know, on a basically a paradise island, you know, it's about as frustrating as it gets. Trust me, I had a really hard time being there and seeing that.
Well, I'm glad you did, because it's been an eye-opener for you, and it hopefully will guide you through your life as you see what's going on around you. They talk about all this waste in government, and I've said this for ages. One of the first things they could do is end the stupid war, insane war on drugs. It's ridiculous.
Absolutely.
We should treat the way the drug situation should be dealt with is that it should be done through education, prevention, compassion, and rehabilitation. And in a true free society, for example, yes, these awful drugs would exist for adults, but they would be manufactured by the pharmaceutical companies. They'd be void of impurities, and we would discourage drug use, but you know, people could still use these drugs. Now, like Ron Paul has said years ago, drug prohibition leads to harder drugs. If you look at the legal market, you got no salt, less salt, no fat, low fat, no tar, low tar. But prohibition leads to harder drugs. You know, instead of just cocaine, you had freebasing and crack cocaine and all this other crap. And then, you know, worse drugs. So, and most people are not going to go out and use hard drugs. And those that are, well, those that die off or those who learn, you know, come around, we'd be much better off. And children won't be killed in the crossfire. You know, liquor store owners are not shooting it out with other liquor store owners. They're not fighting it out.
They're not
fighting over turf. They don't sell to children. I mean, even if there were no laws about minimum alcohol age, I highly doubt that a young person, a child, a 12-year-old could walk into any liquor store and be served, because liquor store owners have children too. It just doesn't work that way.
Yeah, and I mean, as far as, you know, as a lot of the hard drug stuff goes, I mean, do you really think that if it was all legalized that, or it being illegal, these people, they're doing it anyway. There's nothing you can really do to stop them. All they're doing is filling up, you know, a slot in a jail cell. And, you know, you legalize it, these people are going to do the same as they were doing when it was illegal. Nothing is going to change, you know, in their minds. And it's not like, you know, if you legalize crack cocaine tomorrow, you know, people like myself and yourself who, you know, who haven't used this thing are not going to go out and be like, oh, well, it's legal. I guess we should give it a try now.
Exactly,
that's
Tim.
Not the way that people
parents,
are, you know.
Add your parents to that, your grandparents, your aunts and uncles. It doesn't work that way. People aren't going to use hard drugs. Some will, but if it was re-legalized, I like to say the word re-legalized. This is not going to happen like they say it's going to happen. Yes, it might peak a little bit and then it's going to fall down because people aren't going to want to use it. It's just not, you know, there will be maybe more marijuana consumption, but then it just levels off. And I was very sad to read this week that apparently Amsterdam, which I've been to a few times, I love Amsterdam. Now they're going to crack down. They're going to later this year, they say they're going to prohibit tourists from buying cannabis and hashish, and they're going to close the red light district, I guess, too, or, you know, knock that down in Amsterdam. But so many, it's going to hurt Holland. Holland is a wonderful place.
They must just not want tourists, right?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You know, they're going to hurt the economy. So I got to wind down here, Tim, but I'd sure like to thank you again for coming on to Third Stream View. I'd like to have you back again sometime because we can continue this this whole drug discussion here too, because it's an awful thing that's going on. You've seen it firsthand. You've seen two really important things firsthand. So, you know, keep all this stuff. Write it down. You could put it in a book someday.
Yeah, well, I'm really, really happy to be on the show, and I would be glad to be back anytime. I enjoyed it.
Thank you very much. I'm going to say goodbye for now. Thanks again, Tim. You're a great guy. Fight the power. Keep your eyes and ears open, my brother. I'll talk to you later.
Right on, man.
And to my listeners out there, this is PK. I'm signing off till next week. I hope to have another interesting guest on every Monday evening, 9 o'clock Pacific, 11 o'clock Central, 12 o'clock, 12 a.m. Eastern. Until next week, this is your wonderful, irrepressible host, PK, signing off. Good night, everyone.